paramedic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace. 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. And we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. Chargers are coming to town for the Titans home opener on Sunday. And joining us now to break it all down is Ryan Dyrud. He's the founder of the LA Football Network and the host of Believe in LA Football. Ryan, appreciate you for joining us. Happy to have you on the show. Just from your perspective, what is kind of the vibe, the feeling of the Chargers coming into this game against the Titans?
Yeah, well, first of all, guys, thanks so much for having me. Excited to be talking ball with you on this great Friday. But, you know, it's kind of weird. There was so much excitement, especially after that tough, brutal playoff loss against Jacksonville last year and how that ended. And you kind of get this sentiment that, okay, they're going to turn this page. They had a good offseason. They were able to re-sign some key players. They had a pretty good draft from all things considered and kind of turning the page. And then it was kind of the same old song and dance, at least defensively, in terms of just not able to being able to slow down Miami whatsoever. Offensively, there was obviously a lot of good things they did with the new Kellen Moore offense. The running game got going great, which was a problem last year. So they didn't really uncork Justin Herbert much, but they didn't really have to just because they were moving the ball so well on the ground. So a lot of emotions around this team here in L.A., but to answer your question, it's definitely uneasiness after week one. But what I keep saying is, you know, Miami might be one of the best offenses in football, so you kind of got to take it with a grain of salt and then, you know, stack these games as you move forward. So but a lot of uneasiness out here in L.A.
Now, Ryan Dyrud of the L.A. Football Network joins us now. Ryan, what's the status, the latest on Austin Ekeler, and what does he bring to this offense, and what does this offense look like without him if the Chargers will be without him on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it's still, he didn't practice again yesterday. So at this point, definitely questionable for Sunday. You know, I think if I were to put money on it, I think he does end up suiting up and playing. They're just holding that as a precaution. But I mean, he's a huge part of this offense. Anyone that knows Kellen Moore, he loves that two-back system and kind of, you know, in his time in Dallas, showed it off with Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott, who had two different skill sets. And they have that here in LA now with Ezekiel Elliott and Joshua Kelly, who kind of emerged as a true RB2 last week. So, you know, without him, it'll be Joshua Kelly getting the lion's share, and Isaiah Spiller, the second-year guy at the Texas A&M, will kind of take the more ground-and-pound, if you will, back. But, I mean, Austin Ekeler, what he's able to do through the air, the speed he has in space, what he's able to do in between the tackles with his size, it would be a huge loss, especially going against a very formidable, you know, as you guys know, Titans kind of front seven. So big loss. I think he'll go, but in terms of his status, he didn't practice again on Thursday. So we'll see what happens today.
We'll talk with Ryan Dyrud. We're discussing the LA Chargers and Tennessee Titans, breaking them down. Now, Ryan, what is different about this offense? Because these are pretty much the same individuals, with the exception of their first round pick out of TCU, Quentin Johnston. But This has always been an offense where, from the outside looking in, you thought this could be an explosive offense. And at times it has been. But then at times it hasn't. So what's going to be different under the new offensive coordinator?
Yeah, you know, Joe Lombardi being here the first 2 years, I think calls an offense that just didn't necessarily fit the personnel. Mm-hmm. You know, it comes from that Sean Payton tree, being back in Denver now with Sean Payton. And it was more of a, I hate using the word dink and dunk, but it was a much more methodical process of moving down the field and a lot of like flag routes and drag routes and stuff like that. And when you have a quarterback like Justin Herbert, you kind of want to just uncork it and, you know, almost throw the playbook out the window. Now with Kellen Moore, he's obviously going to be very committed to the run, which might seem counterproductive, but it just allows you to open things up for that, you know, that explosiveness through the air. And like I said, last week, they didn't need to use it because they rushed for over 200 yards on the ground. And you know, Austin Ekeler had some great runs and they were able to hit some short stuff that broke open, but it allows them to get more space, get creative with it, And as they kind of move the ball with the running game, it'll allow stuff for play action. So I think we'll just see a lot more diversity in what they do, whereas last year it was, you know, you kind of knew what was coming on every play, it felt like, and that was what was so frustrating for Chargers fans. And, you know, I just think Justin Herbert just didn't fit that system, whereas this will be a lot more to his skill set and to this team's skill set in general.
Now, when you look at this defense, I mean, everything is predicated around Bosa getting to the quarterback. You got Khalil Mack there as well on that all D-line. But from a secondary standpoint, I know the Dolphins are a different team, so we can't look at the Chargers and say, well, that secondary is bad, because look at what they gave up against Miami. Now, a lot of teams are going to give up a lot of yards against the Dolphins. They are just explosive. And watching that film was just like, wow. But – what is it about this defense that is going to be able to help what the offense does? Because it just seems like one person in particular, J.C. Jackson, who they paid a lot of money, they still have questions about him now.
Yeah, I mean, to your point about Miami, I watched the film back, and some of the stuff Mike McDaniel was drawing up was they're going to be open against anyone. So they were the scheme was looking great for them, and Dolphins fans should be very happy about that offense. But, no, you know, it starts on the front. You mentioned Bosa and Mack. They didn't get any pressure on Tua Tagovailoa, and, you know, they had their starting tackle out, and they still weren't able to predicate any pressures on him, really. So that's the big thing, is they got to start getting home on the defensive line. And then in the secondary, it's, you know, they have all the pieces. They have some great talent there with Derwin James. They're really excited about Jossier Taylor, a second-year guy, and Asante Samuel Jr. in his third year. Mike Davis, who's now been there for a few years. They have a lot of talent. It's just putting it all together and kind of staying home as a unit. Now, J.C. Jackson, I think it's a miracle. He was even on the field for week one. So I'm throwing that out, and I'm not, you know, raising the white flag on him yet. He still needs to get his, you know, feet wet back in the system and back just, you know, playing at full speed after the brutal injury he had last year. But, you know, it's a unit that has to be very versatile. Brandon Staley, I always say, he doesn't have corners and safeties. He has DBs. They kind of play all over the field, and they have to work in unison. And, you know, there was some confusion last week, and credit that to Mike McDaniel and his scheme and what Tua and Tyreek and Jalen Waddle were able to do. But I think this unit's going to be a good unit. We just need to see it kind of start building up over weeks. But it starts, honestly, with that pass rush, and they just weren't able to get any pressure last week.
Well, and along those lines, Ryan, what do you know about Bosa? Because I know he's missed a couple of practices here. How optimistic are you?
Yeah, he should be good. Yeah, he's a little banged up as well, which he was. I mean, he feels like he's been like that over the last kind of 2 years. So staying healthy has definitely, unfortunately, been an issue for him. But, yeah, I think he should be good. You know, if not, or if he's limited, Chris Rump will get a good share. And obviously, their Tui Polotu, they drafted out of SC, who had a great game as his first rookie's playing time, will get some reps as well. But I think Bosa will go. Whether he plays 100% of the snaps, we'll see. But it's definitely a concern, because he's the guy that they missed dearly last year, and you brought in Mack to have this kind of two-headed monster, and they've played all of, like, two games together. So it's definitely something they want to get rolling and get them going, because that's going to be a huge part of the success of this team.
I want to ask you about how the fan base is evolving in your market, because the market, you know, you hear people who even cover the league now that say they grew up in L.A. with no team, right, for a whole generation, basically. Now you go from zero to two. You got this brand-new – unbelievable stadium now. So this Chargers fan base specifically, how has it evolved coming up from San Diego?
Yeah, it's such a fun, poignant question that, you know, living here in LA and seeing it, you know, I think it's growing great. Anyone that lived here, anyone that covers the team locally knows it was going to take, you know, 10 years to really get some traction. When you have no teams for 21 years, all those fans, you know, migrate to their team. Specifically, you know, the Niners have a huge fan base here. The Raiders have a big fan base here. And so when these teams come back or they move here for the first time, it's, you know, it's going to take those kids growing up with these teams that are now going to, you know, in 10, 15 years, they're the ones buying the tickets and whatnot. So it is growing. I think there's a lot of excitement. When you have a quarterback like Justin Herbert, it's hard not to be excited about this team. I think to your point about San Diego, there was a lot of pain when they left, and now with it being year seven, I believe that's starting to kind of mend a little bit, and a lot of those San Diego fans that said they would never be a fan again are kind of coming back and making that hour 20 minute drive up to SoFi, since it's not really that far. So it's a growing fan base, it's a fun fan base, it's a loyal fan base, and I think it's definitely heading in the right direction.
So how do you feel the pressure? Like, you hear this a lot league-wide. You've got an unbelievably talented quarterback in Herbert. He's about to go into that second contract where he's going to take a bigger piece of the pie. And you hear a lot about pressure for this year to win before that contract kicks in. But when you have a fan base sort of growing the way it is, what is that like from your perspective?
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure. I mean, I'm sure head coach Brandon Staley feels it the most out of anyone. But, you know, it's on the whole team. It's on the organization to kind of keep what they're doing. They do a really good job in community events. And obviously, I'm sure you guys know they have one of the best social teams in the business, which I think is a big factor of why this fan base is growing, too, just in that realm. But you also got to look at Justin Herbert, who I would say most people would say is a top five quarterback in this league, has all the tools and talent in the world. And he himself has no excuses now. Like, for the last 2 years, the scapegoat was kind of Joe Lombardi and the offensive scheme did not fitting him. But now he has all the tools. He has all the toys to play with. He has an offensive coordinator. And so he's got to go out and win. And, you know, even last week, not to be overcritical, but if you look at the reason they lost that game was the defense giving up over 500 yards. But when it's all said and done, there's a minute and a half left in the game. Justin Herbert had the ball with two timeouts and only needed 3 points to go win and wasn't able to get a first down. So it's kind of like you're the star quarterback with this big contract, now the second highest paid quarterback with Burrow's contract. So there's a lot of pressure on him, too, to go and prove that he's not only worth that contract, but worth the praise of, you know, a top five QB in this league. And when those big moments arise, he's got to go and show out. So pressure's big. The fans are all in. You know, you can't say a bad word about Justin Herbert in L.A. because the fans love him so much, which is great, but he's got to go and show out as well.
But what a great position for this Chargers franchise to be in, that you have that franchise-likable quarterback. But, yeah, to your point, it's got to show up in the win column. It's got to show up in the postseason. Ryan Dyrud is with us. He is the founder of the L.A. Football Network. Ryan, I'm curious, what has the conversation been like about Ryan Tannehill in your circles this week?
Well, I think there's a, no disrespect, but there's a less fear than there was last week going against Tua Tagovailoa, seeing the three interception game and the way the offense moves the ball. So, you know, obviously a guy that's been around the league, he can still do stuff with his legs, but when you look at it from a defensive standpoint, I think there's definitely more comfort level that the Chargers defense will look a little better this week than they did in week one. But, you know, they've still have some great playmakers and can do stuff on the ground. I know it was a little tough sledding last week against the Saints, but, you know, the Chargers definitely won't take lightly what they, you know, guys like Derrick Henry and, you know, I love Tajay Spears, who you guys got in the draft. So, but yeah, I think Tannehill is a, you know, he's a vet. There's the respect there, but it's definitely not a fear factor anymore, if I can say that.
Hey, it's no disrespect. It's okay. It's all right. It happened. It was bad. It was ugly. Last one from me, Ryan. Do Chargers fans expect to win this game?
I would say yes. I mean, if they go 0-2 to start the year, it's going to be a real, real dark days here in L.A. Even with our September gloom going on with the clouds, it'll be even darker than that if the Chargers start 0-2 with all the hype. So I would almost put this as a must-win just to get things back on track.
Ryan, appreciate you for joining us. Ryan Dyrud, he's the founder of the L.A. Football Network. And you can find more of his work on the Believe in L.A. Football podcast. Ryan, appreciate you. Enjoy football this weekend, and we'll be sure to chat with you soon.
Hey, y'all. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it. And have a fun weekend.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. All right. Coming up next, we will react to what Ryan had to say there. Plus, let's do a little comparison. Who's got the advantage here? Coach, quarterback, offensive line, skill positions. We'll do that on the other side. Also, D-Mace, ask D-Mace in 15 minutes. So get those questions in for D-Mace. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063 the game. Do Chargers fans expect to win this game?
I would say yes. I mean, if they go 0-2 to start the year, it's going to be a real, real dark days here in L.A. Even with our September gloom going on with the clouds, it'll be even darker than that if the Chargers start 0-2 with all the hype. So I would almost put this as a must-win just to get things back on track.
There you go. That was Ryan Dyrud. He is the founder of the LA Football Network, covers the Chargers in Southern California on their local radio station and also on the Believe Podcast Network as well. Appreciate him for joining us in the last segment. And I think one thing that really stood out to me there was, I think it's an element of not just falling 0-2 for the Chargers. I think it's also an element of falling 0-2 with a loss to a Titans team that turned the ball over three times and put up 15 points the week prior. Because there was another, you know, point there that Ryan brought up that he said, look, there's just not the same amount of respect being paid to Tannehill and the Titans that maybe was to Tua and the Dolphins. And that's a frustrating and defeating and, you know, unfortunate, but it's reality.
Yeah,
of where your team is at.
And they're coming off a week where they got torched. They gave up 466 yards. And so if Ryan Tannehill throws anything close to that, then there's going to be some people there ready to jump off a bridge, probably out in L.A. But, I think it comes back to the perspective that we've tried to bring you on our show, right? Here in this market, and it starts with the Titans, their expectation is still to hang on and be a winning team. That is, even though they have some part of their plan is long-term. You can tell with the two quarterbacks drafted, with some of the salary cap moves they made. It wasn't an all-in, but it certainly wasn't a rebuild. They still feel like they can win. But the over-under for wins for the Titans was 7.5. Despite all of the issues for the Chargers, and that's a team with issues, right? Their over-under wins is about 9.5. So nationally, there is no comparison between the two teams. The Chargers are a favorite on the road, even though it's a West Coast team coming a long way to play here. So I can see the Chargers saying, well, we'll just get well against the Titans. I'm hoping that that's when you get a little Rocky Balboa from Mike Vrabel and the Titans kind of rallying, because this is, if they're going to contend, this is, you got to knock some teams off like this. Like, we perceive this as sort of an even game. Nationally, I think it's kind of a should win. Chargers should win kind of thing.
And I believe people in L.A. feel the same way about the Chargers. It's sort of like, I equate it to, let's just say, boxing. You go out and you fight the top contender. And, you know, you lose to the top contender in a close match. You know, it ends up going to the scorecard. And he may win, he wins two out of the three votes, but it's 75-76, you know, in favor of the other opponent. But then you fight someone that may be the fifth, you know, ranked boxer. You feel a little bit different going into that fight because you say, I went against the champ and I damn near beat him. This person who's a little bit lesser than me, I shouldn't have any problem with him because I'm not running up against the same issues that I ran up against the champ. That's how I believe the LA Chargers feel. They look at the Dolphins game like, listen, there's nobody in the NFL as fast as the Dolphins. There's nobody that can put three skilled players on the field that all run sub 4.3s. Nobody in the NFL. And we hung with them. We should have beat them. Then they come into this game and they look at the Titans, their methodical, sort of slow build-up offense. From a defensive standpoint, they're thinking, okay, we should be able to handle this. Only thing we got to worry about is Derrick Henry. And if we stop him at the line of scrimmage, then we're good. So the feeling going into this game is a lot different, I believe, in L.A. than it was going into Miami game. The Titans got to use this to their advantage. They got to use this. It's almost as if the L.A. Rams possibly could be thinking, whew, we got to break this week because of how Ryan Tannehill played last week, because of how the secondary played last week. They're thinking our big receivers, you know, the way we run our offense, quick tempo, we should be able to get some big plays on them. The Titans got to find a way to turn that around on the L.A. Chargers.
And Caroline, wouldn't you say that in the past, this is when Mike Vrabel teams sometimes are at their best, when they're kind of the wounded animal. Like, oh, wow.
We're back in the corner.
How are they going to do it? If Fulton's banged up again, now they've lost Hooker. Man, they should have a field day against that team. There's no way they can win. How many times have we said that before? Mm-hmm. But is this the same Titans? That's the question.
That is an element to a game like this that I don't think can be overlooked. And maybe it's an element of this game that I have overlooked, of the Vrabel underdog mentality. The Vrabel, everyone is counting you out kind of bulletin board material that seems to energize and motivate this team. And we've seen it across several different Mike Vrabel teams. Doesn't matter, you know, who the pass catchers are, who's on the offensive line, the coaches, the coordinators. It seems like Mike Vrabel-led teams have that sort of, to use your term, Willie, the Rocky Balboa mentality of everybody is counting you out, but we're in the background, in the shadows, putting in the work, and we know that we are tougher than you. So that is an element. that can take you so far. I mean, sometimes there are teams that are just better than you. Sometimes there are teams that can just put up more points than you. But I think we have seen that. You know, it's a term that Jared has coined, the Vrabel special, of you lose a game you're not supposed to lose in ugly fashion, and then you win a game that you're not supposed to win. Now, the Titans aren't massive underdogs in this game. I mean, when you're a dog in your own stadium, yeah, that, you know, it's not a great look. But you're a three-point dog. You know, I believe it was ESPN's FPI that put the Chargers at like a 60-something percent chance to win this game. So you are an underdog in this game. I do wonder how Vrabel gets this team up after such a crushing loss that they saw last week. But it is absolutely an element.
I'm not worried about him getting them up. This is the home opener. They should be up for this game. The question is, are they good enough? And for a team like the Chargers, like, what is the reputation of a Chargers? Underachievers, right? A lot of talent.
They don't win enough.
Haven't put it together. Don't win the close games. Mike Vrabel's teams have won the close games. But can you lean on that? Are they good enough? To me, this is going to be a great test of, because I feel like they will be ready to play. I'd be surprised if this is a blowout. I think it's going to be right in there. But can the Titans take their game to enough to a big enough level? Can they rise to the occasion defensively and against a really talented offense? And can the offense pick up the slack in a game where they're going to have to score more points, because the weak suit of the Chargers would appear to be anyway on defense, especially if Bosa is not playing, which we don't know.
Which calls for a very interesting matchup for a team that can put up 40 points a game against one of the best defensive line in the National Football League versus an offense that didn't score a single touchdown the week before and a defense that has been struggling. So it'll be a fun matchup for certain. Ask D-Mace coming up next. Get those questions in for D-Mace. Get your calls and your text. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Hey, join 1025 and 1063 The Game's Big Joe Dubin Show this Sunday at Fieldhouse Tavern in the Nations for the Big Joe Sunday Show. Big Joe will be broadcasting, breaking down all the action, especially the overreaction to all of this Sunday's big games. Get some excellent food, good drinks, and hang out with Big Joe Dubin from 4 to 7 p.m. this Sunday at Fieldhouse Tavern, located at 905 51st Avenue North in the Nations.
G-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
Quick throw. Mason.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards. You can ask him anything. Have a question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now on Caroline, Willie, and
D-Mace.
On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Ask D-Mace. Get those questions in for Derek Mason. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Taking your calls, your texts, all of your questions for D-Mace. And hey, speaking of D-Mace, you can join him, Jared Stillman, and Chris Sanders at Teddy's Tavern, located across from the Bridgestone Arena Plaza, this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 as we tailgate for the Titans home opener. They'll break down the Titans' Week 2 matchup against the Chargers and give you the latest updates before the game. Our NFL pregame show is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and Beast Unleashed. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. D-Mace, you ready for the questions?
Absolutely. You forgot to add in there award-winning.
You know,
you got it. Hey, listen.
Underdog leader.
Exactly. Underdog leader. You got to add those things in now. Come on.
The award-winning pregame show. Come on.
Absolutely.
How could I forget?
Absolutely. There we go.
Oh, man. Bring it on. 615-737-1025. What do we have in store for D-Mace this week? I've got one to start it, Caroline. Uh-huh. You ready?
All right. Let's get into it.
Okay. Here we go. Texter Jim says, D-Mace, if DeAndre Hopkins does not play, how do you see the distribution of the ball to the Titans receivers?
You know, you said something earlier, Willie. I don't know if it was on air or you and I were talking.
If it's good, that, it was on the air.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
If it was, bad, good, yeah, it was off the air. Air. Nobody yeah. heard it.
But Willie said, listen, if D-Hop can't play, it may be a good thing because now I'm no the quarterback or the offensive coordinator wouldn't be so highly dependent on one individual. Sometimes when that key guy is out, it allows everyone else to get in the flow of the game. And this may be an issue. This may be a situation where, you know, if D-Hop doesn't play, I hope he does play because he does give him a better opportunity, a better chance to win. But if he doesn't play, it may be a situation where Ryan Tannehill starts to look at everyone instead of just zeroing in on one guy just about every time.
Yeah, and when I said that, I wasn't saying I hope –
yeah, exactly.
DeAndre Hopkins is gone forever, but it may be a positive in the short term mm-hmm. for what you just said. I agree with that. And then when you get D-Hop back, now you've got everybody involved.
Exactly.
And maybe you get the balance you're looking for. We'll see. Just a theory.
Eric is on the line with a question for D-Mace. What's up, Eric?
Hey, guys. Before I get started, it's not a dad joke, but I do have a joke that I think, Derek, you're going to love if you want to hear it.
Go ahead.
So a few days ago, I got a phone call from a good friend of mine who said that he talked to another friend after the Alabama-Texas game. This guy was so despondent. He was so upset, just really down in the dumps. So my friend says, hey, you know what? I'm going to cheer you up. How would you like to go out to lunch with me? And he says, yeah, I'd love to go out to lunch. Where are we going to go? He said, Longhorns.
So he added insult to injury.
I actually heard that joke. When I heard that joke, I laughed so hard. I was in tears. I thought that was a good one, but I thought you might appreciate that.
No, I did. Go ahead.
Yeah, teammates, my question is current is this. One of the things I'm hearing, I've heard these rumors, there's talk that if it goes south to Tennessee or that the Jets were looking quarterback, he was one of the quarterbacks that had been mentioned, Ryan Tannehill, possibly going back to the Jets. Of course, one person that hated it when he heard about it, of course, was Mike Greenberg. He kind of just trashed it. I won't get into specifically what he said. But if it does go south, do you think that Tannehill could be traded? Was it to Jets or somebody else since the last year of his contract? Or do you think, regardless of what happens, he's going to stay with the team? Always good to talk to you guys. Y'all take care, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. I appreciate the question and the joke. I think it's going to take a couple of weeks. For them to get to that point, if indeed they get there. I think they have the utmost trust in Ryan Tannehill. I think they would lean, you know, to keeping him as a starting quarterback rather than not. Unless, again, we're in week six and they are 2-4, you know, 1-5 right before the trade deadline. Then they may be looking to because their thing is, hey, listen, we're going to start the book over anyway. We're going to start the page anyway. We're going to turn the page anyway. So if we can get something for Ryan Tannehill right now with a team that may be a little bit desperate or may need a quarterback to sort of get them to where they want to be in regards to the playoffs, then let's go ahead and do it because at least we can get a fourth, maybe a fifth round pick away from a team if indeed we – are choosing to move away from Ryan Tannehill. But it's going to take, you know, a lot in between that to happen for the Titans, for them to sort of go down that road. Because they're in win mode, I think, as a organization. They want to win as much as they possibly can while they still have Ryan Tannehill as their quarterback. But if it looks as if that's not going to happen, I think that's when you will start to possibly see, you know, or hear Ryan Tannehill's name mentioned in trade talks closer to the trade deadline. Don't expect it now or next week. Expect it a little bit closer to the trade deadline.
Now, I can't attest to this since I wasn't here in the city covering the team at the time, but do you feel a little deja vu from the Marcus Mariota days?
It sort of seems, it feels that way, but the part, here's the difference. Ryan Tannehill has been playing good football ever since he took over as quarterback. Mm-hmm. Marcus, and he was, you got to understand, he was a rookie and he had to work his way in. You know, he had his whole 4 or 5 years to sort of get better. But there were a lot of ups and downs with Marcus. And there were a lot of things that I think they found out he just couldn't do.
And you hope that he would eventually be able to do that.
But they knew it wasn't going to get there.
He was young, and he was the second pick in the draft, and you were hoping. And look, I thought for a while he was going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I defended him through some of the growing pains, and he just plateaued. And the other thing that killed him was not being able to stay healthy, to really get to the next level. So, to me, that was the difference, Caroline, in that Tannehill's a veteran, right? He's a guy that you should know what you're getting at this point in his career. Marcus was a little bit of a, maybe he'll get there. Maybe he can still get there. But they got to the point where, correctly, they got an insurance policy, which was Tannehill, and they did not commit to him to the next contract.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, maybe a little bit more optimism there with Marcus versus you know what you're getting with Tannehill.
Exactly.
You should, anyway.
Right, you should. Yeah. Who knows? Give me a little bit of whiplash over here. Cody Texan says, do wide receivers feel pressure to get open quicker when they feel like the offensive line is struggling?
No, you can't. You can't think that way because you end up shortening your route, doing things that you're not accustomed to doing. Your main objective is to just get open. Be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. Give the quarterback a window to throw the ball into. Put yourself in a position between the defensive back and the football. That's what you have to do. You can't worry about the offensive line and if they're going to do their job or not. Because what if they do their job and then you rush the route? Now the quarterback hasn't even hit his third or fifth step, and you're into your route. Now when he looks at you, you're covered. Why? Because you have rushed your route. You have shown the defense what you're doing already. So in regards to wide receivers, we're not worried about the offensive line. We're not. We're worried about just getting open, doing our job, making sure, again, that we're getting as close to the depth as possible. And then we're running the offense or running our pass routes the way they're supposed to be ran. There's always going to be a little leeway here and there, but it can't be predicated on whether the offensive line is doing a good job or not. You leave that to the offensive coordinator. If the offensive coordinator feels that the offensive line isn't doing a job, then he is going to do two things, max protect, or he's going to go to the quick pass. That's what he's going to do. Receivers, we can't worry about that. We just got to do the job that we have been tasked to do, and that's get open.
More questions for D-Mace coming up next. Get those calls and texts in for D-Mace. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. And, hey, play silly underdog picks for your chance to win weekly prizes. Make your picks today at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app before the first game on Saturday. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Superbook Sports. Ask D-Mace. Get those questions in for D-Mace. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Chip from Mount Juliet, Texan. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Said this could be a 9-game losing streak for Mike Vrabel. When is he going to start feeling the heat?
When is Vrabel going to start feeling the heat? Well, if they lose 3 or 4 in a row, then everybody's going to feel the heat along with Mike Vrabel. But this has been sort of the unanswered question. And we've all been asking this. You know, first you get rid of your GM, then you get rid of your offensive coordinator. Who's next? You know, in the line of guys or individuals that are on the blame list. Right now, you would tend to think just by the process of elimination that Vrabel is at the top of the list of the blame game. Now,
totally.
They're going to give him every opportunity to right the ship. They are. But if they, like the texter said, if they go on a 9-game losing streak, it ain't just going to be Vrabel that's on the hot seat, I tell you that. There's going to be a lot of other coaches on the hot seat as well within that organization. But, you know, Vrabel do deserve, if this continues to, you know, go as far as them not playing well on offense, them losing close games, then, yeah, you're going to start to hear not just fans, but you're going to start to hear from a national standpoint the noise or the chatter about, you know, Mike Vrabel. Has it worn thin? Has his message fallen on deaf ear? Has he gotten the most out of that roster that he could possibly get? Do they need a new voice in the locker room? These are all things that come up no matter what. If you go 2 to 3 seasons and don't win and miss the playoffs, when you are a team that is accustomed to making the playoffs, look at what they're saying about Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick has won 7 Super Bowls, been to the playoffs just about every year. But the last 2 years, after Tom Brady leaves, they didn't. So now what is happening? You're starting to hear the chatter. Is it wearing thin there in New England? Has the message been lost on these younger players? Can Bill still do it? If it can happen to Bill, it can happen to Vrabel as well. So if this thing starts to fall off the rails, then, I mean, just by process of elimination, Vrabel is next up.
Heck, it's happening to Saban now, too.
Yeah, exactly. So it happens to every coach.
The shine comes off the apple.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Dylan texts him with a question for D-May. Says, hey, Derek, I have a hard question for you. Let's say you're playing in the Super Bowl and you got injured at halftime and your team is down 3 points. The trainer or the doctor can give you a shot in your leg to let you go back out and play, but there's a 90% chance that you will further your injury in your leg and that this will be your last game. Or you can sit out the second half and go back at it again next year. Which would you choose?
Well, it all depends on where am I at my career. You know, if I'm in year 15, then okay, shoot me up. Let's go out there. Let's get it done. Because more than likely, I am retiring after the game or sometime, you know, during the season or after the next following season. So if I'm in year 15, yeah, I'm out there. I'm trying to help my guys win. If I'm in year 5, no, I'm not. I'm just not. If my injury is that significant where they say, listen, if we give you the shot, you may be all right for this game, but you can further injure your knee and it's going to set you back a lot, then any reasonable person would say, and your team would expect you to say, don't put me out there. Because if I'm that important to the team, they need me for more than just this one game. Even though they would love me for that one game, but they need me for the next following season as well. So I'm saying, listen, I'm good. I hate that I'm hurt. I want to be out there. But I have to think about my health long term in this game, not necessarily about this one game. And I'm in year 5.
That's a interesting question. Here's another good one. D-Mace, this is from Matthew. What are your thoughts on the George Pickens situation in Pittsburgh? He was caught on camera against the 49ers, visibly angry on the sideline about lack of targets, and even liking Instagram posts blasting Kenny Pickett. This was a theme last year about him being angry about lack of targets. Should the Steeler fans like me be worried he's a ticking time bomb?
Okay, there's a difference between being frustrated and venting than being frustrated and venting at the person that's throwing you the ball.
Also in the moment during the game as opposed to after the game you're on your phone.
Exactly. When you are on the field, and I've had heated conversations with Joe Flacco, I've had heated conversations with Steve McNair or whoever other quarterback. I played with like 10 different quarterbacks in the NFL. And out of that 10, I would say I had some heated moments with at least 2 to 3 of them. But it was at the moment. Once the game was over or we are on to the next series, I had forgotten about it. We were trying to accomplish some things on the field. After the game, that was never my thing to get on social media and start blasting the calls.
To me.
Exactly. Or start going at my quarterback. Again,
imagine
this
if
is
a
guy throwing
it
my
to
ball.
His receiver?
Exactly. The receiver would be so upset. So
oh
upset.
Gosh.
Like, dude, how can you come at me like that? Again, I don't mind the back and forth during the game because Coaches do it to other coaches. Players and coaches go at it. Players and players go at it. Guy may miss a tackle or play the wrong defense. Those guys are arguing on the sideline.
Brady was very demonstrative
exactly.
at times.
But once the game is over, it's done. We all just need to get it corrected. So I'm not – you Steeler fans, you may want to be a little concerned because it just seems – and I'm just saying, it just seems like – in the last since Hines Ward left and that group of receivers, since they've left, this new group of receivers, a little bit unstable. You know, you don't know from Claypool to Brown and now Pickens. I mean, yeah, y'all may want to start just worrying a little bit.
And there was even a viral moment from the Thursday night football game last night of A.J. Brown.
And I don't mind that.
Jalen Hurts. Right.
And I don't mind that because it's all during the game. Now, if AJ starts to tweet about Jalen Hurts after the game and all that, then okay, we got a problem. But AJ's not going to do that. You know, he wanted to go to Philly.
I don't know.
He wanted to go to Philly because of Jalen Hurts. So he's not then after one game is going to throw him under the bus. That is not going to happen. If it happens, I would be the first person that tweet at AJ and it's like, that's not cool. But I don't expect that to happen in this case.
We know AJ's Twitter fingers are going to Twitter finger. But yeah, I'm with you. I think that relationship between Jalen Hurts and AJ Brown is too strong for AJ to start coming at his quarterback publicly. I mean, that's crossing a line. And that's breaking a level of trust. One texter asked D-Mace, says, do you feel like the secondary being last in the league last year and still giving up chunk plays is a problem? And why doesn't anyone really talk about it?
Well, if you've been listening to this show, that's all I've been screaming.
You talk a good bit about it.
Exactly. That's all I've screamed this last season. I screamed this at the beginning of the year. I screamed it during the draft, offseason, free agency. This secondary, I am worried about, and nobody outside of sort of this room that we're in, meaning you, Willie, and myself, no one else really talked about it. No one else really brought it up. But this has always been a concern of mine because not just they're not playing to the level of the defensive line, they're hurt all the time. This is probably the one position that's hurt more than anybody, it seems like, the last couple of seasons. So this is nothing new to this show. We've been screaming about this secondary since last year, but it gets overshadowed because of the offensive line, the pass catchers, and we have such an awesome defensive line that the people just think, oh, if you got a great defensive line, then the back end should be good. Not necessarily, because they're not getting to the quarterback every play.
Last year, they gave up the most yards per game through the air, 270-something yards. Mm-hmm. But it can, I think to a degree, it can be rationalized by saying, well, look at the defensive backs they mm-hmm. had and look at where the defensive line was by the end of the year. That contributed. Still a question mark. But that is a huge factor going into this mm-hmm. game. What's interesting is that the Chargers ran the ball so much last week. They ran it 40 times. Mm-hmm. But do they just say, you know what, we're licking our chops, let's attack this Titans secondary? I'm curious to see what kind of game plan we see.
And I think the reason why, D-Mace, you brought it up, mm-hmm. how it might get overshadowed by quarterback talk, because it's the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And also because we have so much trust in this defensive line that I look at it and say, hey, if you can disrupt the quarterback, get to the quarterback and disrupt the play, then you don't have to worry about the secondary. But it absolutely still is a concern, one, given the injuries, and two, given just the sheer number of yards that this team gave up and the secondary gave up last year. And, oh, yeah, you're going up against a quarterback and an offense that can put up 35 points in a game. So absolutely it is a concern. All right, coming up next, we'll check in with TSU head coach and Titans legend Eddie George, plus our three things, our three keys to victory for the Tennessee Titans. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, hey, tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball today at 6:04 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan. Awfully precise time. I like it. The Sounds take on the Charlotte Knights, AAA affiliate of the Chicago White Sox. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan is presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans and Family Leisure.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.